Okay, welcome to the third lecture of organizational behavior. As you can see, I'm not Rolf van Dyck, sorry for that. I'm the Einwechselspieler, so to say, because he has a very important appointment today. I will give you this lecture. Before we start with this topic, I want you all to fill out this PANAS. I think some time in your bachelor you will had some contact with the PANAS, the positive effect negative effect scale, but still just for a warm up, please fill it out. We won't compare it. We won't ask somebody how he feels today. It's just for you, so you get in contact again with this material and. Yeah, we'll be a little bit better, maybe prepared for the lecture today. Okay, so I think it's enough for everyone. Please give it through. So, PANAS is very important. I think, you all heard about it, and whenever there is, in research, for example, when we need some information about how people feel in this particular moment, usually we will use the PANAS for, and this is, the case for the last two decades maybe. So have fun with it, and maybe you will see it in your master later again, and then you know about it. Okay, you still working on it?
No.
Okay, so I hope you're in a good mood today so we can enjoy this lecture together. Maybe to enlighten your mood a little bit, I show you a little scene of my absolute favorite TV show, just to show you how important moods can be at the workplace or in organizations.
For everyone.
Sir, I don't want anything from you ever.
You know, that's what my son always said. But then when Mother's Day rolls around, guess who wants me to go have this on a pasta pot for Edith?
But sir, I...
She's not my mother, damn it! I don't think that I've forgotten that you have yet to turn in a case report. You have to be six.
Okay, so... moods can actually make a big difference, and we will talk today a little bit about how it can, and what we can do about it, maybe. Okay, so. Wieso macht er das jetzt nicht? Ah, da ist er. So, yes, emotions and moods. Before we start with it, like you know from Professor van Dyck, first we clear up the sample items from last week. Were there any problems with it? What was the question to the answer to question one? Which of the following answer choices is the best definition of attitude? Yes. Correct. So, statement B was. It was a little bit tricky, but I think when you think about it, about the other possibilities, that it's always there's some emotion involved, and so it's all only the emotional part or reaction, so only the behavioral part. And we're talking about where you talked about attitudes in general last week. I don't like this beliefs, the word beliefs in this sentence perfectly, but still it's the correct answer. And what was the correct answer for question B? For question two? Yes, correct again. So the affective attitude, affect what we are talking about today. And maybe it would be better if there would be an object for the attitude, but still, it's the right answer. And the third one, yes. Correct. So, any problems with that? Thank you. So, then we can come to our actual. So that's the schedule today. Third session, moods and emotions, and going on. So what we are going to do today, and you should be able after this session, is at first we will talk about what are emotions, what are moods, what's the difference, what are some basic emotions and moods. The sources, or at least some sources, there are very, very many sources of emotions and moods, but we will cover maybe some important ones, especially for an organizational topic. Then we talk about emotional labor. I think you will hear a lot of it in Dieter Zapf's from Dieter Zapf, because he's a big expert on it. But we still will cover it. Emotional intelligence will be our next topic. And Then, at the end, we will apply the concepts of emotions and moods to some OB issues, right? So how can we apply this stuff to our actual work later, maybe? At the end of the session, we will contrast the experience, interpretation, and the expression of emotions across cultures. So a quick look on, is it everywhere the same, or are there differences? Good. So what I first want to talk about is there is a myth of rationality, right? So in the first years of psychology and especially OB psychology, so emotions were kind of seen as antithesis to rationality. So when you're emotional, when you have emotions, you are not rational, and so it's bad in some way to have emotions, because they make problems. They should not be seen at the workplace, because if you're angry or if you're sad, then maybe you work less good and you have problems with your coworkers and stuff. So emotions are bad. Emotions are unrational. But that's not the case today. And I think it's good that this view changed, because there are emotions in our workplace. We can't just switch them off. So to say it's unrational, we don't want them, is not enough, right? And there are not only bad emotions, so to say. It's not anger there. It's also like we saw in the movie before, there are also very good emotions. So if you are very in a good mood, that can actually help you with your work and with your interaction with your coworkers. So this switched a little bit. This myth of rationality, I think we overcome that. So, but still, in some fields of psychology, I think still it's sometimes so to say, emotions are all bad, at least at work, and I hope I can show you in this session that's not always true. Okay, so I think you all should some time in your bachelor studies have heard this this differentiation. So, but still we should at least cover it shortly. So, affect is the big generic term of emotions and mood, so it covers both, and it's just a broad range of feelings that people experience, right? So it's whenever there's some emotion, some mood, or anything like that involved, you can talk about affect. So, and emotions, moods, what's the difference here? I think, yeah, it's pretty straightforward. So emotions is a short time event that comes after some specific thing that comes through your day or something like that. So someone is really rude to you, and then you feel the emotion of anger back to him, right? So you didn't do anything to him, but he still is rude. So you're feeling the emotion of anger because what the hell? Why is he so bad to me? I didn't do nothing, right? It's shortly. Maybe you are a little bit pissed over the day because it started bad, but that would be going into the mood then, but right, this first seconds, maybe minutes of bad emotion where you really think now I could punch him in the face or at least say something really mean to him or her, that would be your emotion that right there, right? So it's specific, you really could tell now I'm really angry. Yeah, it's not hard to tell if you feel an emotion. Sometimes maybe it's a mix, but often it's really clear. Yeah, and mostly you show it really. That maybe you all know this, or most of you know this TV show, Lie to Me, right? So this, there are mostly when you feel strong emotions, you show it in your face, right? You show facial expressions. Yeah, and of course, and it's action-oriented in nature, and you want at least, right, when you feel really strong good or bad emotions, you want to feel like you want to do something about it. When you feel really good, maybe you want to dance around, smile, maybe talk to a good friend, to evaluate your good feeling, to keep it going. And when you're in a bad mood, you want to act it out on somebody, maybe. Yeah, and moods is more the broader term, right? So how do we feel over the day? Is it more like I'm feeling a little bit sick, so in the last week, so the mood over the day for me is not that great, right? So I feel a little bit tired, a little bit not under the weather, and so I can feel good emotions though, but the flowing mood over the day is maybe not that great. Yeah, and you don't show it all the time, right? When you're in the first when you wake up, then you show it, but after the day you get used to it that you're not, it's not your greatest day, and then you don't show it in your face. And it's not that general. You couldn't say, I'm feeling angry mood over this day, but it's just not that good. Yeah, a little bit cranky, a little bit sleepy. It's not that clearly defined as an emotion, okay? Good, so. How can we structure moods? Well, there are a lot of different classifying systems. I think this is a pretty straightforward one, easy to understand. So you can classify your moods in positive and negative, and low and high. So relaxed would just be a low negative effect, right? You don't feel any big positive effect, but there's almost none negative, so it's just low negative. And low positive would be there is nothing positive there, so I'm rather bored, right? It's not really that bad, but there's nothing really good going on either. Okay. So yeah, there you see some of the I think classic emotions. It's also not totally made out what counts as an emotion and what not. There are some discussions going around, but I think these are some of the classics. Okay, Like we said before, it's often said that emotions are bad. For example, for decision making, for rational thinking. So why do we have actually these emotions, right? So wouldn't it be better for our survival if we're just rational beings in a way? And I think that's not the case, right? So it's not always possible to think everything out in our life, yeah? So it's not always when we have day-to-day encounters in our life, day-to-day things, it's not always possible to think everything through. So emotions often give us a good guideline what to do, right? So sometimes maybe it is appropriate to be angry at someone because he did treat us unfairly. But of course, anger can be a problem, and it also emotions tend to lead us to unrational behavior, but it's not always the case that it is like that, because sometimes we have two very close options to choose from, and sometimes rationality doesn't bring us to a decision, and then maybe the our moods or our emotions help us to decide. And what you will talk about in a later lecture about decision making is when you know a lot, when you're really expert in a field, right? When you really know a lot about something, for example, about music or stuff, then sometimes emotions and gut feeling, so to say, helps you, right? Because you know so much that it's not all in your mind. It's not all accessible. It's more an implicit knowledge. And then your emotions help you to know what is the right answer, even so you can't actually say why. So you will talk about that later on, but I think here is a nice connection. And yeah, of course, why do we have emotions? It's also, of course, survival of the fittest. Emotions, for example, fear is a very important emotion that helps us survive. Maybe not in this modern society or something like that. Maybe that's sometimes it's more hindering, but still, fear to fail and fear to die or whatever helps you, right? It's not all bad. Sometimes it's too much in some people, but a basic level of these basic emotions is very important for your daily life and for your survival as well. Okay, so now we come to some sources of our emotions and moods. And first, I want to show you. Yeah, would you have expected that? So it's when is our mood best in the week? And when is it best? In which time of day it's normally at its best? Would you have thought it that way? I think for me the week is pretty straightforward, right? So Saturday maybe the best day, so the nothing to do, at least no work in most cases, and yeah, still the Sunday in front of us. So someone would say that's not at all true for you. Sunday, the worst day, maybe even. So that's in.
I had a different experience once that I shared with colleagues I worked with before. That on the positive line, you usually had a very, very good day on Monday. And you can still get everything done. And then on Tuesday, when you realize, nothing of my to do list actually faded away, but there are more topics coming in, it was our worst day in the week. So,
okay. My personal turning point down would maybe be on Tuesday, and then on
Wednesday, there was this chance again. Oh, well, there
are a few
more days, you can still
figure it out. Like, to go up again. Okay, so Tuesday, the worst day of the week?
Yeah.
Maybe it's, I really feel that Sunday really pushed me down. I don't know, but it's always like, oh, the weekend is behind me. Tomorrow, waking up again early and stuff. So yeah, but I think you can't. It's just it's different for different people, and of course in cultures, right? Like in the Arabian world, where Friday is the big day off, then it would be changing. But I think for European and American weeks, it's pretty it's pretty obvious. But I can see your Tuesday argument pretty well. Yeah. And what would you say about the midday thing? Yeah. It's just big data correlations.
I think in the US still, the weekend is not as important as it is in Germany.
I would say it's both, but I'm not big into this kind of research. So, I talked to Rolf, and he said as well, Europe and America, but I can't tell you exactly. Wednesday and Friday are already pretty good, right? So you want to say Wednesday?
Friday night is very good.
Okay, Friday night. And what are you saying about the midday thing? So is midday the best? Oh, sorry. Maybe it depends on what you're expecting on this week to come to you, right?
I think this is exactly what the chart
shows. Yeah. That's the lowest point is on Sunday, yeah. It's so what would you say about the midday thing? Would you have expected to be midday on average the best time of day? Or morning, evening? What is your favorite time, or what would you think straight ahead? What is the best day, best time of day? I think I wouldn't have expected it actually, because I would have said maybe in the late afternoon when the work is done and when you can relax or something like that. But I think the theory behind it is that on the midday you have most social interaction, right? So there's the lunch break where you meet your friends, you meet your best like coworkers maybe, and you talk with them, talk about the day, talk about important stuff, and so that makes you feel better, right? So that's the theory behind it. I'm not sure if it's every day for me, but sometimes I can agree at least, yeah. So that's, I think, surprising as well. So weather, there's a lot of data about it, but there is not that big impact that everyone would expect, right? So the daily weather, so if it's rainy or sunny, has almost no impact on our actually moods and emotions, or actually. Do you feel different? You say no, that's not true at all.
I've been to Sweden for 5 months, and especially during January and February, and the weather there definitely has an impact on people. I'm feeling kind of having a hard time to agree to the statement.
I think that's not what they actually tested, right? So they really looked at moods at sunny day and moods at a cloudy, rainy day or something like that. That's something else you're talking about, more like this time of year stuff, that winter depressions, that's pretty much the case. I think they really just correlated with the weather of a good day and a bad day, but not actually the time of year. Otherwise, I would really say that's not true. Yeah, that I would totally agree with you. Yeah. Maybe, but maybe it's just you think in the morning, I have to go out. But then after you did it, it's not that bad. I didn't do any research about it, so I can't say. But that's what the literature says. Yeah, I have a little hard time to believe it myself. But yeah, you have to work your mind around it a little bit. Yeah, you're right. Sometimes I feel that the weather actually, does get me in a good or bad mood. But you're right, and it's just an attribution error or something like that. Yeah, maybe that's true. Okay, stress. Kind of definition, right? That stress is a negative emotion, and when you have stress at work, that worsens your mood, of course. And a little level of stress in the literature says actually you are more productive, right? So you can work better if you are a little bit stressed and you feel a little bit pressured, because then the things have to be done, but still you feel worse, right? So it doesn't make you feel, now I'm in a stressed mood and now I can do everything. You still feel all the stress, but you are actually a little bit more productive and do the work quicker. Yeah, social activities, I think that's pretty obvious, and everybody can agree to that. That if you have some contact, physical, informal, epicurean, I learned that is when you go on lunch with your friends or whoever, so if you go eat something, then that increases your positive mood. And as social psychologists, we always would say that's true. Don't sit alone in your room. Find other people you like at best, and then you feel better. And most of the time that's true, I think. Yeah, and sleep is an important thing as well. So I think it's a problem that in our society that sleep is more and more seen as more like time we use wrongly, because we are not actually working or doing something great with our life. We're just sleeping, we're doing nothing. And I think that's kind of a bad thing, because sleep is important to our well-being, to our mood and emotion, to our functioning. And I think it would be not bad if all of you after this lecture would think about how much do I sleep, could it be a little bit more, and maybe do so. That would definitely help you. Exercise, I think everybody knows that friend or themselves maybe, who say, I did exercise and I now feel so good. Did really bring me up again. And sometimes or often it's the case, right? So we are lazy and sitting in the at home and not going up and running or working out or whatever. But when we do it and when we did it, we most of the time we feel better ourselves. Our mood is a little enlightened. So age, that's again a little bit tricky. I'm not totally sure if that's always true actually, but in the literature at least and in the research right now, that's the point that older people experience negative emotions less frequently. That means older people are basically a little bit more happier or not in that bad mood. I struggle with that myself, right? So I'm not sure which people they actually asked. I think maybe they just had a small window between 30 and maybe 50 or 60, but maybe not on the very on the high end. There's not so much people who were actually asked about this, but maybe that's attribution error as well, that we always only see the cranky old people. I don't know.
And the longer you live, of course, the more events. your experience even more, so that you can like improve the scale. And maybe someone experienced something very bad, but only because he lived that long. That, for example, our grandparents maybe experienced war. They have like a better scale for which is important, bad or importantly good in our lives. Maybe this is what we still have to develop.
Okay. So you think it's not about the actually felt emotion, but on how you would scale it, so how you would say how good or bad it is. Okay, yeah, that's a fair point. I see it. Yeah. Okay. So that's another nice thing to, seems as a cliche. So women show greater emotional expression, display more frequent expressions of emotions, and experience emotions more intensely. So. But there's again this nurture-nature discussion, right? Is it really that they feel it more because they have a different biology than men, or is it socialization? Oh, complicated word. So do men always? That's a thing, right? So when boys start to cry or start to act out emotions, angriness or sadness, they get stopped more frequently when they are kids, right? So that could be at least one factor for this outcome. And what's also interesting, Rolf always tells this in his lecture, that women live longer because they have a better social net, right? So they feel more positive emotions because when the wife dies, the husband often is very left alone because all the friends related to the woman, right? And when the husband dies first, then the woman has still all this social support and network, and it's easier for her to still keep going a very interesting and fulfilling life. You wanted to ask something, Jose?
Are female in the animal kingdom also more emotional? Do you know something about that?
No, I don't know. I think it's really hard to measure emotions in animals, but would be an interesting point, yeah. Maybe in apes or something. Okay. Okay. Now I tell you a little bit about research Rolf conducted with some colleagues. So it's about the affective events theory from Weiss and Cropanzano from 1996. And it says that the features of a workplace, like employee welfare and supervisor support, leads to events at work. They could be positive if there is a positive climate, a good employee welfare and supervisor support. So if it's good, your supervisor tells you positive stuff, he's a little bit more supporting and nice to you, and so you have good little events at work, right? So he comes in and smiles at you and says, hey, that was a good job yesterday. And if it's the other way around, then maybe he just not that bad, and he supports you not like this, and then you have not these events at work that affect your affective experiences, right? So the boss smiles at you, pays you a compliment, and so you feel that affective experience, and then your job satisfaction grows. So the thing Professor Van Dijk and his colleagues tried to show again is that there is a connection between these features at work and the job satisfaction, but it's actually mediated through these events at work and the affective experience. He conducted this research in a big sample of 2,000 call center employees in 80 different call centers. So that was something new. Usually it was just made with one company, and so they had a nice sample of different features of work. So companies where there's good support, companies where there's bad support, and they could actually validate this or show that this theory is actually valid, and that this actually happens, that this connection between positive features in an organization at work are lead to job satisfaction mediated through events at work and effective experiences at work. Okay. If you want to know more about it, just ask him next week. He will be happy to tell you more. Another slide about it. So they also, in this sample, tried to show that like we have shown before, effective experiences at work make job satisfaction better or worse, and job satisfaction now should have a stronger impact on this more cognitive based outcomes like health complaints or turnover decisions. And the more effective part should have a more impact on this effective commitment and stuff. And he only could show this direction of job satisfaction, so that the cognitive part of job satisfaction had a stronger impact on contingent decisions and health complaints, but not the other direction. Like I said, if you're interested, just ask Professor van Dijk next week. Okay, and now to the big field of Professor Zapf's biggest research interest, emotional labor. So, an employee's expression of organizationally desired emotions during interpersonal transactions at work. That's the definition of emotional labor. So that means you have to show some emotion you might not actually feel at work. So the classic sample is maybe, or often used sample is stewardesses. They always have to smile, right? So if there are the meanest and unpleasant people in the airplane, they still have to smile, be nice. It has really come to something that they can do something about an problematic guest, right? So when we don't feel what we actually display, the emotions don't actually feel, then it comes to emotional dissonance. So we have to show, we have to smile, but we had really a bad day. We really feel we have some problems with our partner. We have kids, our kids are sick or whatever. We really feel bad, and we still have to smile and be nice. Even there is a jackass in front of us who's really mean to us, and we did nothing. So, right? And still, no problem. We will help you. And that really, I think everybody can see that it really can get you and make you feel bad inside. So, Professor Rolf again and his colleagues showed that emotional dissonance actually correlates with some negative outcomes like burnout and stuff. So that's when you show this emotional labor and you feel this dissonance, that really can lead to burnout and other negative job outcomes, and can really be bad for you. So a little bit deeper, what are felt emotions? Of course, what do you really feel on a day? It was a really bad day. You really feel kind of just going home, laying in my bed and doing nothing, but you have to work and you have to be nice to everybody, right? So there are two different kinds of displayed emotions. There's surface acting and deep acting. Did you hear about this concept already? No? Okay, so surface acting is actually that what you all have in mind now, right? So you smile and be nice, but you really feel I could punch that guy or that woman in the face and please leave me alone, but you still have to smile. And it's really, there is this dissonance, and you can really feel it of you're actually felt and you display the emotion. And then there is this deep acting, what seems to be in the literature, research says that is not that problematic. If you actually try to feel it, right? So not just act, but really try to feel the emotions. You have to display. It sounds a little bit problematic, and it is not perfect, but I think it's better when you really, when you start your job and say, okay, I have to be nice today, there's no way around it, so I try to feel, maybe I think about a joke, maybe I watch a funny movie on my mobile device, and then I feel a little bit better, and it's easier for me to actually display these emotions, and I try to actually feel them and really mean that I'm nice to someone. Somebody, it can't work maybe, but often if you try to really be nice to someone, then you actually feel it. He smiles back to you. You feel a little better. So this deep acting, is a little bit better to cope with when you actually have to display some emotions on your workplace. Okay. Good. So before we start with that, there's another nice questionnaire you can fill out today. The emotion intelligence score. It's again just for your own interest. If you wanted ever to know how you are in these tests, I don't want to say how emotionally intelligent you are. That's really a big debate. We're talking about it in a minute, but how good are you in this emotional intelligence tests? Okay, finished? Someone's still working on it? Okay. Okay. So, emotional intelligence. So that's I think you all heard about it. It's a concept that really got big in the public. So there was a time when everybody bought a book of emotional intelligence, tested themselves, how good they actually are. It's the concept. It's a ability concept, and you should be self-aware. So can you actually recognize your own emotions as experience? Do you know what you actually feel? Why you actually feel it? Can you handle them? And the other important part of emotional intelligence is detect emotions in others. So do you understand what others feel? So classic empathy, actually, right? So do we understand what others feel and how, why they feel like this, and why they act because they feel like this and stuff like that. So actually, classic empathy. And then emotional cues and information, all right? So every time we see someone and think, he or she maybe feels like this or that, or everything that hints to emotions, that's kind of this emotional intelligence. And it's actually associated with high job performance, so it seems to be kind of important. I hope you all were good at it. But there are some problems with it. So there's a big debate. Maybe you heard about it. And first of all, what speaks for it is that it actually, everybody feels it makes intuitive sense, right? So there must be some ability that some people are very bad at it, right? That there are even like Asperger and people who can't feel emotions and empathy or emotion in others, empathy at all. And there are people that you feel they really can read you, right? You have a little emotion and they immediately ask what is wrong and what's your problem and stuff. So there seems to be something going on, but it makes sense to everybody. And of it seems to actually predict stuff, right? So it's positively correlated to stuff like high job performance. And there are some studies that even suggest that there is a neurological component to it. But it's really vague. So the concepts, there are a lot of concepts out, and there are a lot of measures, and some measures is how would you react in some situation. There are some questions like what color is this or that emotion, or yellow is what emotion, or stuff like this. So there are a lot of different tests, and I think it can't be measured. At least it's very hard, and there is a big debate. And I think there's no really valid and valid test to test emotional intelligence, at least to the present, right? So that's a problem. And maybe the biggest problem for researchers is that it's very close related to other constructs. For example, intelligence. So it correlates very high with normal intelligence tests. And it's correlated with personality. And when you take this things out, or if you control for intelligence and personality, then it's no unique factor. And it doesn't actually explain any job performance or stuff like that, right? So, yeah, there is something about it. I think everybody thinks there must be something like that, but still the research can't actually figure out how it works, how we can measure it, and if it's really a standalone concept or maybe just one part of intelligence. And yeah, so that this debate is still going on. Is there any opinion on it? What do you think? Yes.
Yeah, it would definitely lead to the fact, or I would see that it is maybe a combined concept of how intelligence and personality come together, although it is a bit difficult because I don't think that the more intelligent you are, like, the better you are in emotional intelligence. But if you are a very social person at the same time, I don't know how it would, like, interrelate.
Mm-hmm. I've read some books about emotional intelligence, and those books actually disagreed with intelligence tests, saying that if a person is highly intelligent, that doesn't mean that he has high emotional intelligence. Often there's not a correlation between those, meaning that if your IQ isn't that high, you still are able to be successful in life, and this factor could be measured by having emotional intelligence. So the books I've read, just a few, they try to explain how this is possible, that still being a person with a low IQ can be still successful, and explaining it over emotional intelligence. So I don't see that there is a close related to intelligence. Of course, personality, yeah, I agree, but to intelligence or IQ.
I think there is a big correlation there, but still there are people who have not that high intelligence and still are very, and the other way around, you're totally correct. But I think actually most of people I know that are very intelligent are also, that's my experience, are also very high emotional intelligence. But of course there are very, very often there are as well exceptions. So I have no very clear standpoint on this as well. I'm still struggling with my opinion on emotional intelligence, but I can see all your points very clear. Okay, so we're coming to the applications of emotions and moods. Selection. So, there's a lot of debate and stuff going on, but still I think it would help for some jobs if you see if there is some emotional intelligence in a person, right? So if you constantly have to work with people, then a test for emotional intelligence could actually help you find the right person, because it is important to be empathic and stuff. And if you work with people, and that could help definitely. Yeah, and decision making, so positive emotions can increase problem solving skills. I think, yeah, when I'm in a better mood, then I come with better solutions to some problems than when I'm in this, yeah, like bad mood that I think, it doesn't work out anyway, just should do something else or stuff. So it helps us understand and analyze new information. You are more open to new stuff, right? You're not shutting down and say, just leave me alone. So good emotion, positive emotions help you actually at the workplace. And when you are a boss or so, try to be a little bit more positive, and then that helps your coworkers or your followers as well. And creativity also is positively correlated with moods. And feedback is also very important here, of course. Yeah, and motivation, of course, right? So promoting positive moods may give a more motivated workforce. If there is a boss who tries to lighten the mood, who makes a joke, who tells you that you're a nice person, that you did a good job, that you look good today or whatever, lightens your mood and makes you more motivated. It doesn't have to be only the boss, also your coworkers. And so if there is a good connection, a good team climate in your team, that makes a better mood and that helps everybody. Emotions may be bad at negotiations, right? So if you actually want to hurt a person or you're angry at someone, then that's often the case in negotiations, right? You negotiate because you have different things you want, different standpoints maybe, and then often there come bad emotions into play. You feel angry about someone, you want to win a negotiation, you want to hurt the other guy, and that can really impair, make a negotiation almost impossible, because it's not the aim that you actually solve your problem, but to win the fight, and then that never goes good for everybody at least. Yeah, and customers and other people catch emotions, right? I tried to say it for your boss and your employees or for your coworkers, but it's also true, of course, for customers, right? When you go into a store and there is a nice guy who's in a really good mood, who tells you what you want to know and maybe gives you a little tip and smiles at you, then you feel good, and then maybe you buy something, and if he doesn't and he's rude and look at yourself, help yourself, and I have to start some other important work to do, at least, you will feel worse as well, and maybe don't make don't buy the stuff you wanted to buy there at least, or whatever. And that's called emotional contagion. So everybody has felt this when somebody's in a really good mood, that's really contagion. It's really, you feel better yourself. Yeah, job attitudes. It's possible that you carry your emotions from work back home, but it doesn't carry on to the next day. So be a little bit careful when you go home. I think a famous soccer player, football player, said something like, "Man sollte nicht seine Emotionen beim Fußball ausleben, sondern zu Hause bei seiner Frau." Maybe you should be careful with that as well. So, at least with your bad emotions, be careful to carry them at home. Your partner or your friends maybe don't know why you're so pissed and you're so cranky, and at least tell them, and maybe then they understand, and it's no problem. Yeah, and it's very, very straightforward as well. Deviant workplace behavior. People who feel negative emotions are more likely to engage in deviant behavior at work. So if the team and the organization and maybe the customers treat me badly over a long time and I feel really bad in this job, and on this day maybe especially bad, then I even will steal from the maybe only small things, maybe even big things, and yeah, that doesn't help anyone. Maybe it helps you, but not the organization. Yeah, and okay. Go. So there's always the slide. What can managers do? I already mentioned it briefly. Humor is always a big help when you want to enlighten mood, right? It's some people have problems with being really humorous. But if you are this kind of person who can tell a good joke or be a little bit funny, then play that card, right? That helps everyone. If it's not like rude to someone or offensive, then go on and be a little bit humorous. Only very boring or people would really say that's wrong. It's mostly really helping. If everybody laughs together, that already gives you a connection to the people and helps everybody. Yeah, and as well, already mentioned it, give small tokens of appreciation, even a smile. The first thing in the morning that you see coming in makes a big difference. Is it a smile from your coworker, even someone you not like too much, but he smiles at you, maybe we have a good day today, or is it cranky, good morning, you're late again, or something like that. That really makes a difference. And show the people around you, show your followers, show your coworkers your appreciation once in a while. I think it will always pay back, and everybody will feel better afterwards, right? And everybody now thinks when I say this stuff, everybody knows it, but we still often don't do it, right? We could pay them a smile. We could say to them, wow, you did a really great job on this presentation, on that speech, on whatever. This was great. We often don't do it, and why not, right? It's good for everybody. Yeah, and try to stay in a good mood yourself. That's always the first step. Sometimes it's hard, but at least trying is often the first step, and Not always, at least not in a good mood, but you don't have to be in a very bad mood. Sometimes something maybe can help you, and that will lighten everybody up. Hire positive people. Yeah. Maybe easier said than done, but I think if someone would tell a good joke in a talk for a job, then I would give him a bonus in our hiring process. Okay, so very briefly, global implications. So does the degree to which people experience emotions vary across cultures? Do people's interpretations of emotions vary across cultures? Do the norms for the expressions of emotions differ across cultures? And yes to all. Maybe you all know that, right? So when you go to different countries, especially when you work there, it's very different how emotions are displayed. So in Asian countries, maybe you can say yes to that. It's much more uncommon to really display emotions in a manner like we do it in Germany, that we're laughing out loud or something like that. So in the Western world, maybe it's a little bit more common to display emotions more frequently and more stronger. But it also differs in Europe, right? So in Scandinavia, maybe you see less often people scream out and hugging them and smiling at each other. Maybe it's a cliche, but I think in the literature it says as well. And in Southern Europe, it's more common that you express your emotions more frequently, stronger, and So it is a yes to all of it. And if you actually go to another country, maybe a country where the culture is very differently, you should actually think about that, right? So that can be a big problem if you really do it wrong and display your emotions very often to your boss. And so at least maybe think about it, maybe ask about it. That could help you for the start in another country where there is another culture about emotions. Okay, so implications again. Of course, it's important to understand. I hope I could show you some important factors about understanding the role of emotions and moods, and that you can, and of course, when you have some emotional intelligence, it also should help you to predict behavior, right? So when someone is in a very bad mood, maybe you should think, oh, there could be coming something, and maybe also you should think, okay, it was because he was in a bad mood, and we should talk tomorrow, and maybe we can figure it out, and not today when he's really cranky, and yeah, just let it slide. And but when he's all the time cranky, maybe then that's actually a problem. Yeah, emotions and moods do affect workplace performance, and I think a good mood always, or most of the time, helps you to perform better. And it's the same with your coworkers, your boss, your followers. Yeah, and that's always a problem in everyday life, right? So we can manage our emotions a little bit, but sometimes they are out of our control. Sometimes we just feel them very strongly. It happens something very depressing or something very great, and we can't really control our emotions, and we should keep that in mind as well, that also is true for others, right? It's not always that we have big problems and can't control our emotions. It also might be true for the guy you just talked with, and yeah. Okay, yeah, I already said that. Okay, there comes a summary. We are not finished after the summary, so please keep sitting. We have another small topic to talk about, but about moods and emotions. So differentiated emotions from moods and listen. So what we did is actually the topic of this. Yeah, right. We differentiated emotions from moods, so you should know what's the difference, and we listed some of them. So the basic emotions and moods, I think you all know them when you think about it, and now you should know even better. It identified the sources. We discussed the impact emotional labor has. I think we will hear more about it in a Professor Tupp's lecture. Emotional intelligence, like I said, a complicated field. Everybody maybe has a standpoint on it, and maybe you know a little better about it. We applied the concepts of moods and OB issues. I told you a little bit. Maybe I hope sometime you can use some knowledge of it. And I talked a little bit about the cultural influence. Okay, and now I show you a little bit about positive emotions. Professor Van Dijk encountered this field of research some time ago. I think it's really interesting, and this presentation which follows is more like Professor Van Dijk sometimes uses this to show people how important positive psychology is and how it could benefit us. So it sounds a little bit like commercial, but it's not for those of you who haven't heard too much about it, just a short introduction into positive psychology. So positive psychology means that for a long time in psychology, we research focused on the bad part of humankind, so to say, right? On the bad kind of emotions, on mental illnesses, on all this very important problems, of course. It tried to fix all the problems we have in our daily life. But there is a big thing of positive things in our life that we also could enhance, right? It's not always, oh, we feel very bad. How can we feel better? It's also the question of how can we feel good, actually, right? How can we make our life better, and how can positive emotions help us and stuff like that? And so that's positive emotion, positive psychology, what positive emotions can, how they can help us. And yes, just some impressions. So convey positive emotions. We covered it a lot in the session. Think about it. Why do you have to always be critical? Maybe to some people. Maybe to some people we are often very critical. And why do we have to do it? Show more gratitude, maybe. Try to be more positive. I think it's always helped. So there's a positivity ratio from 3 to 1. Maybe most of you saw the movie Matrix. So maybe my favorite scene is where the agent tells Morpheus that they tried to build a perfect world where everybody was happy. That didn't work out, right? So every time happy doesn't work, but it should be, there should be a positivity ratio of 3 to 1. So then it seems that's a thumb rule that if there are 3 positive events in our life and then maybe 1 not that positive, more negative event, then we feel kind of, then we have generally a good feeling about our life and ourselves, right? If it's got too positive, maybe we get bored or something like that. Maybe then we can't really, can't really appreciate this good and positive emotions of events. And when it goes too bad, when there are more than 1 in 4 events, then we feel nothing good happens and my life sucks or something like that. Right? So. Positive emotions, they really can help us in our life. They enlarge our intellectual, physical, and social resources. They create reserves which we can use in times of struggle. So if we have a really bad time, then positive emotions can really help us. Maybe even displayed from others, from ourselves, when we think positive about it, that's even if the It sounds like acting, maybe, but sometimes it helps us, right, to go positive into a situation. Yeah, and of course, when we are in a good mood, we are liked more, we bond more. It's easier when you think about when there's a guy smiling and he's interacting with everybody positive and tells a joke and, it's a nice guy, then it's much easier for you to bond with him, and it goes the other way around. So if you are positive, then it's easier for others to go to you, start a talk, and interact with you. Yeah, all these things. More tolerant, more creative, and more engaging when we have positive emotions. So when we feel positive, we would easier give someone, help someone or something like that. And we are also more open for new ideas and new experiences. I think you all can really agree to that. But problems have not to be planned out, right? It's you just have to counterbalance in a way. If you just, they are still happening, of course, negative events in our life. But if you have a more positive view, it's easier to deal with them. Actually, when you think, that really sucks what happens to me right now, but I think I handled so much bad situations, and I will also handle this bad situation. It helps you. Okay, that's maybe an interesting study for all of you who are in a relationship. So Gottman made an interesting thing. He filmed married couples and counted the positive and negative interactions that occurred between them, right? So he just cooked, did they smile to each other, patted them maybe, hold hands or whatever married couples do to show their loves to each other. And he counted also the bad things when they frowned or when they said a bad word or somehow showed a bad emotion. And based on a 5-to-1 relation, so not 3-to-1 here, but 5-to-1, so in a very deep relationship, you maybe should have even more positive events in relation to negative. He predicted if the marriage still was going on after 10 years, and he had a prediction rate of 94%. So really, really good, really good prediction rate. And so you really can see, right? So this small things really matter in your relation as well, in your daily life, and especially in relation when you always, you like your partner very much, but you don't really show it to them, and you more are the criticizing type that wants to, maybe make your partner even better, but you do not really show your positive emotions to them. That really could be a problem on the long term, on the long term relationship part. And another nice study to show you the power of positive was an interesting study in 2001 about 180 American nuns. So they looked at their diaries. That was they looked if they were more positive or more negative in life, right? So did they really like their life? Were they really positive? Did they like being nuns and having a good relationship with the other nuns and think they had a positive and good life? So were actually happy or not, right? So you really can see that pretty good in a diary, I think. And so it really makes you live much longer if you are happy and have a positive life. So 90% of the nuns who felt their life was good and were happy with it made it over 85, and only 34% of the nuns who were actually not that happy with their lives, over 94 it was this, still that's a big amount, right? Like 54% of them still living over 94, and only 11 in the not happy group. I think that's pretty cool study to show you to be a little bit more positive if you want to live longer. Yeah, so positive effect leads to lower fluctuation and higher OCB. You know what OCB means? Organizational citizenship behavior. So if you not only do your job and go home after 7-8 hours, but if you go the extra mile, help your new colleague, do the work, it's not actually yours, but it has to be done to help your team and stuff. So that's really important, because it's hard to measure the usual work stuff, because everybody does somehow the same, and you do 100% and you can't maybe do more. But this OCB stuff is really important, because you really can measure it. Is there a guy who does more than he should do, right? Or is he not? There's a correlation with income and all this positive stuff. Better negotiations and conflict resolutions. Positive leaders of service departments lead to higher customer satisfaction, better moods of the staff. So we already talked about this. More optimistic life insurance agents have higher sales. Yeah, so we already talked about it. Being positive really affects your work life. And so does laughter affect your life. I think that's interesting as well. So when you read this, maybe it would for all the German native speakers, it would work better with lachen. So if you see the word lachen, then automatically your facial muscles, so Lachmuskeln, work a little bit. And it's contagious, like we already said. It's really hard when someone really laughs hard and really you really see it's real, and it's then you have really hard to concentrate, not at least smile or laugh with them, right? So, it's contagious. Yeah. So that's like I said, a little bit sounds like a commercial, but it's still true. He tries it. I think most of the time he's actually successful. But we all know it. We should be like that more often. But sometimes it's hard to be always. It's not. We should not be always like that. But more often than we actually are, I think. At least it's true for most of us. Yeah. So even on Monday mornings, you said Monday is okay. I don't like them too much. But even on Monday mornings, we could be maybe a little bit more optimistic. And maybe the week is better then. Okay, so that was it from me. Please think of your portfolio, right? So don't forget it. I think it really helps you, and you don't have to learn as much for the exam on stuff. And yeah, think about it when you watch the next TV show or when you read the newspaper or when you meet your friends. Think about what I said today. Maybe something will trickle in, and maybe you smile a little bit more often. Or yeah, don't say the cynical thing you wanted to say to your friends. Sometimes it's maybe not necessary, and it just doesn't help the mood to enlighten. Okay. Thank you very much for your attention. There are your sample items for next week. And yeah, have a good day, have a good mood today, and we see us someday else, maybe. Bye.